Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. There's all kinds of family. We chose this one. This is episode 347, Little Shop of Horrors from 1986. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too. And this episode is brought to you by Plant Cult, Cairo's number one online plant distributor. Check out their Hard to Kill collection at plantcultcairo.com.
Well, shout out to plantcultcairo.com and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. With us tonight, talking about the second 80s cult movie of the lab, we have with us returning champion, our first ride-along companion compatriot, the resident historian, Mike Manzi. Hello, Mike.
Good evening, guys. Good evening, Joes. Is that the theme, 80s cult movies?
Because that is the theme for this lab. Yeah. It is sponsored all lap long by Josh Buckley and Michael Moser. And actually, shout out to them. And also, shout out to Cassie Wilson, Nick Burris. This is unprecedented in the first minute of the episode. Cassie Wilson, Nick Burris, Alex Ellenin, Justin Kleiman, Brian Rodriguez of High Schools of Coastal Grand Bros. What? Wes Hampton, Jerry Robinson, Dan the Duke, Hayden Renato Di Donato, Michael McGann, Lane Middleton, Lindsay Lewandowski, Nate Milton of the Kings of Sports, Jason Rainey, Tom Price, Mike Gallier, Josh Buckley of Whole Lot of Wolves, Michael Moser, both of them aforementioned, sponsoring the whole lap. Christian Larson, Tara Newone, Aaron Willows, and Natalie Absolute, Randy Carter, Josh Goulart, and Jessica Collins, a.k.a.
Montez.
Thank you all for supporting us at the $5 a month level or above. But yes, Mike, Chris, not Chris, Michael and Josh both sponsored the entire lap, and so they picked all of our pit stops on the main feed.
Okay.
And their theme is 80s cult movies, as you know, because I know that you listen to every episode of this show.
Did they curate this list? Because
they did.
They picked all the movies.
Great list. The only other movie I would have wanted to do is not on the list, which would have been Howard the Duck. So maybe some other time, or maybe that's just a cult classic for me. Maybe I'm...
You love those naked duck breasts. Movies. Yes. I was like, what word can I use that's going to make it the least weird? Didn't land on a good one, but...
There are none.
There we go. Now that Howard the Duck is back in the MCU, it is very exciting. It's a very exciting time to be a Howard the Duck fan. But we are here tonight talking about Little Shop of Horrors. Our first 80s cult was Predator, and now we're doing Little Shop of Horrors. So very, very cool.
Awesome.
Before we get to Joe, because I'm very curious to hear what he has to say about a very musical movie. Mike, what is your history with Little Shop of Horrors?
It goes way back. You know, I was there in theaters.
I was going to say,
that's what I was thinking, too.
You know, my parents took us to the movies all the time. I was always going to see stuff. And they brought me to Little Shop of Horrors down the street from where I work now. The theater's still open. Still there.
Is that where we saw Godzilla or no?
No, that theater actually closed. Yeah, after 100 years, and it's becoming... 100 years, and it's becoming a performance arts center. So it's still going to be something.
Thought you were going to say cupcake shop. I got really sad.
I have this memory of seeing this movie and sitting like two seats over from the rest of my family because I wanted to like experience it alone or something. Mm. And I remember this like...
So in 1986, you were like 35 years old, right?
First of all, I was 62 at the time. This was 1985, right? 86,
yeah.
I was a little tyke.
Why did you want to experience it?
I don't know.
Did you like watch the trailers and you were like, this looks like a phenomenon. I must see this.
I think the only thing I knew about it was Rick Moranis, because I loved Ghostbusters back then at the time. I still
obviously,
like Ghostbusters.
Yeah. And of course.
He was the only thing I knew about this movie. My parents were excited about it. They knew the play. They were familiar with the original, the Roger Corman film, which I became very familiar with later in life. And I just remember this very old couple sitting behind me, and I'm like a little six-year-old, and like they're super old. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, everybody goes to the movies. Like, this is crazy. Like, all ages.
This was like a life-changing moment for you, watching a movie
film
alone.
Film is for everyone.
Realizing these people behind me who are my age.
My age now. But I was blown away by this film. Like, it's just insane. I love this movie. I've always loved this movie since. I watch it often. You know, I think Frank Oz is like a genius. He makes amazing movies. This is like the mix. Like, he's probably most well known for like Muppets, perhaps, but like, I'm also a big Blues Brothers fan. So this is like the perfect mix of like the Blues Brothers and the Muppets to me.
I get
this.
You. I can see it. Yeah.
it's like incredibly well shot. Like there's so many things later in life that I came to appreciate it for more. Always love this one. You know, it's just like always been around. And, you know, I watched it this morning in preparation and I was like half the songs I'm crying, half the songs I'm laughing. Like it's all just like a good memory.
Good.
Joe, Joe, had you seen this movie before this week?
Absolutely not. I had never seen this movie before today.
Had Rachel, so I know that you were saying of to me course. That Rachel was explaining over explaining things. You're like, lady, we need content for the podcast.
Amen.
Stop. But she had seen the movie before, or she had seen the musical, or what had she seen? Do you know?
She had seen the musical, and she has seen the movie before.
Okay. Now, Mike, have you seen both endings of this movie?
Yes.
I don't know the second ending.
We'll get to it in the end. Don't spoil the other ending now, Mike. But right. When did you... So the theatrical version was the only one available until about 12 years ago. Until about 2012, the theatrical version is different. It's different from the musical ending. I think it's commonly referred to as like the happy ending. Mm-hmm. But which one have you seen? I mean, I would imagine you've probably seen the theatrical one more. And do you... Again, I don't want to spoil what it is yet, but do you have a preference between the two endings?
You know, I think I just like... the theatrical ending because mm-hmm. I'm so used to how it plays. And I think, you know, not to spoil anything, they sort of both have the same ultimate conclusion, if you will, right? Like it's all still going to happen. It just, we don't see it. But I have to say, like, what they were going to do was incredible. Like as an adult, I was like, oh my God, I don't think my young mind would have been able to handle that. You know, I think they made the right choice for the demographic they were going for. If this was an R-rated movie, they probably would have been able to, that would have flown better. Who knows? Maybe with
what, the director's cut? Or
yeah, the director's cut. I think, yeah.
Okay.
Because the story is just darker in general too. I mean, even the, like the Corman one. But like, I was also just blown away by how horrific, like as in a horror movie, like this still was. Like there's a lot of murder, a lot of gore, a lot of coarse language, you know, a lot of attitude.
So if you don't know what Little Shop of Horrors is, a nerdy florist finds his chance for success and romance with the help of a giant man-eating plant who demands to be fed.
Yes.
So Mike already ran through a little bit of this, but it was directed by Frank Oz, who directed Dark Crystal, What About Bob, Muppets Take Manhattan, but he's best known for his work with Jim Henson, Sesame Street, Star Wars. He is the voice of Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Animal, Cookie Monster, Grover, Bert, Yoda. Like this
insane.
Guy is
insane. That's everything. Yeah.
One of the all-time greats. It was written by Howard Ashman, who's mostly a playwright, who died in 1991. Mm. He is best known for writing lyrics for what they call the Disney Renaissance. Oh. So he wrote a lot of the music for like The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and a lot of those movies.
Which I love.
Died
yeah.
during that. And so his mantle was taken up, I think, by Jim Rice, I believe. Produced by David Geffen, which is a very interesting thing.
Right.
He's mostly a record executive.
Yeah.
He also founded DreamWorks and Asylum Records and Geffen Records. But he also produced movies close to Mike and My Heart, Interview with the Vampire, Risky Business, and also Beetlejuice.
Yep. If only Cruise was in Beetlejuice, imagine.
Seriously. Shot by Robert Painter, who shot American Werewolf in London and, importantly, Mike, Superman 2 and 3.
There you go.
Same cinematographer.
Love it.
He also shot the Thriller music video, Trading Places and Muppets Take Manhattan.
Okay.
A budget of $25 million, made $39 million at the box office, so sort of a modest success, but didn't make a ton of money. 91 on Rotten Tomatoes, 81 on Metacritic. Remixing Roger Corman's B-movie by way of the off-Broadway musical, Little Shop of Horrors offers camp, horror, and catchy tunes in equal measure, plus some inspired cameos by the likes of Steve Martin and Bill Murray. So,
and Christopher Guest.
And Christopher Guest as the first customer. So here's the brief history of this property. So in 1960, Roger Corman, who we talk about a lot on this podcast, mm-hmm. because he had the original The Fast and the Furious, he made The Little Shop of Horrors. And it was maybe based on either one or two different short stories, but it's just it's a movie without no music.
Yes.
So then in 1982, Alan Menken and Howard Ashman adapt this into a musical off-Broadway. Mm-hmm. It had then had a five-year run off-Broadway, eventually hit Broadway in 2003. There were revivals. It was being put on in New York as recently as a couple years ago.
Yeah, I feel like it comes back. It keeps coming back after a couple of years. Yeah.
Well, so yeah. So So in January 2020, there was talk of a remake of the movie starring Taron Egerton, who would be, you know, Elton John, and he was also Eggsy in Kingsman. Scarlett Johansson as Audrey, and Billy Porter. not postponed because of the pandemic, but a year later postponed and definitely even canceled in September 2022. But in weird timing for this, literally last week as we record this, news surfaced of another reboot to be directed by Joe Dante, who did Gremlins, okay, produced by Roger Corman. And of course, because we can't have single nice things, it's a reimagining dubbed Little Shop of Halloween Horrors, intended as the start of a new movie franchise. So it's like, not only are we going to remake it, but we're going to do a whole bunch of nonsense.
Maybe they'll get one for every holiday. It's in the Dante.
Oh, that's a great idea, Mike. I like that. Like Little Shop of Thanksgiving, Little Shop of Valentine's Day. That exactly would be fun.
Little Shop on 4th of July. It's cool that Dante is taking the helm, though, because he came up through Roger Corman's like training school. You know, like he worked for Roger Corman forever, like cutting trailers, making movies. So that's good.
That is cool.
And I don't know, did you guys hear about the original that Roger Corman made that movie in like 24 hours or like two?
No.
It took him like 2 days. I think it was like partially a bet to see like if a movie could be made within a day or so. And I think he ended up making it in under 48 hours. I think that's like the legend about
insane.
That. Yeah. And that's how he sort of started to get his name as like a producer who actually produces, or a director who gets shit done, and like a guy who like, you know, backs up his talk and stuff.
Very, very cool.
That is very cool. I didn't know that at all. Yeah.
So, Mike, one thing we have started doing, I think you might actually have been on an episode last lap where we did this, but last lap we discovered Crazy Credits, which is a listing of IMDb things where fans submit things they find crazy about the credits, and it has devolved into nonsense, and it's not actually what it's supposed to be. But we have four crazy credits for Little Shop of Horrors. The number one crazy credits, quote-unquote special thanks, are given to Paul Dooley because his scenes as Patrick Martin were cut and recast Jim Belushi. Dooley's scenes are restored for the director's cut, and consequently, Belushi gets these special thanks instead. 26 up, 0 down.
Oh, what, so they crazy flip-flop that? That's cool.
Yes, so in the theatrical version, Jim Belushi is the guy who's like, I'm gonna take Audrey 2 and make it big.
Yeah.
Okay.
Different, same type of scene. Part, yeah. But different actor.
Okay.
Crazy credit number two, the quote horrors in the title is painted in red, which then begins to bleed down the screen.
One I like that.
Crazy credit number three, only the lead actors, Steve Martin and the girl group, are listed in the opening credits. The voice of Audrey and the celebrity cameos are credited at the end. One up, 0 down.
Amazing. They're killing
crazy,
them.
But
they're
whatever.
Killing
they
them.
Used to do that a whole lot more than they do these days, mm-hmm. like those post-credit outroductions, is it?
And then the final crazy credit is the first half of the end credits highlights the cast with the credit of its respective actor. 0 up, 0 down. People are just like, I'm not even click thumbs down. It's just like, this is
that might be new, Joey. That might be like yesterday's crazy credit. God. We don't even know. You might be breaking news here.
Someone heard about the remake and they're like, I remember the crazy credit about the first
season. Seriously. So some trivia about this. I think I remember, I mean, I don't remember it happening, but I think I remember seeing video clips of it. Mike, you might remember this, but when this movie was doing like the press junket, Audrey 2 would sometimes get interviewed by different reporters and it would sometimes eat the reporters.
No, I wish.
That's
I
really fun. That's really fun. I like
not
that.
All the
That's
time,
good.
But a handful of times.
That's cool.
There are no blue screens or opticals for any Audrey 2. The plant was made in 6 different stages of growth, and there were 3 different versions of Mushnick's shop, making it possible for 2 units to work with different sized plants at the same time.
Oh, very cool.
Each of the talking plants had to be cleaned, repainted, and patched up at the end of each shooting day, which could take up to 3 hours, depending on how big the plant was. But all of that is practical. None of it's special effects. It's just
Amen.
Puppets.
It looks yeah. like it. It looks great, yeah.
And I heard that they had to shoot the plant at half speed every time in order to get it to look natural at normal films, 24 frames per second. And that means every time you see Rick Moranis and the plant sharing a frame, he is acting at half speed or at a lower percentage. So think about that.
He's insane too. Yeah.
You don't notice it. Like, you know,
no, I would have never known that until you said that. Nope.
But that's a reason like the plant looks so fluid. There's even one point in the movie I never noticed before where he's going like, no, 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 no. Like he's doing that. And it's like, looks awesome.
Speaking of the plant, Mean Green Mother from Outer Space, which was written for this film, is the first ever Oscar-nominated song to contain profanity.
Sweet.
Oh. So shout out to Curses.
Shout out to leading the boys from South Park one day.
Yeah.
Seriously. Blame Canada. What songs are, I mean, we did that on 1999, but what songs from that movie were nominated for?
Oh, I don't remember which song. I think Blame Canada was it, right?
Well, that's the one they could perform because it had like the least profanity.
Swears, what, they couldn't perform, yeah. Uncle Fucker?
I mean, I'd have, they, I mean, Robin Williams wanted to. He ended up performing Blame Canada.
Let's see here. I'm going to see accolades. Academy Awards, Best Original Song for Blame Canada. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did not win, though, unfortunately. So the dental tools in the scene with Bill Murray would again appear in Batman. They were the tools used on Jack Nicholson's Jack Napier Joker after he fell into the chemicals.
Oh, cool.
And the weird coincidence here, bringing everything full circle, is that the original Roger Corman, Little Shop of Horrors, was Jack Nicholson's first movie where he plays the Bill Murray role. So, like, right.
Oh,
he was in that role, and really then it all comes back together a couple years later, which is very weird.
Very
Speaking
cool.
of Bill Murray, this is the only film still where Steve Martin and Bill Murray are both in the movie together.
Unbelievable.
Wild.
What? Yeah, that's insane. That's what is that? De Niro, Pacino style. Like, how are they only in one movie together and not like even really that much together, right?
One scene. One, yep. Yeah. One perfect scene.
And even though they don't share a scene, this is a pre-union for us, Joe, mostly important because of Last Lap, of Steve Martin, John Candy. Planes, Trains, Automobiles will come out a year later. Yes. And we just did the Planes, Trains with no Automobiles lap.
Oh, that's so weird. Sorry, because I'm in Ghostbusters.
No.
Bill Murray and Rick Moranis, yes, share a moment when in the dentist office, but Rick Moranis and John Candy, you know, they come from SCTV together and seconds and all that kind of stuff. But he was John Candy was originally going to be the Lewis Tully role in Ghostbusters, and Rick Moranis ended up playing it. So there's all kinds
of very cool
connections happening.
Speaking of things that were almost done, at one point when David Geffen first got involved, Steven Spielberg was a producer on this, and Martin Scorsese was going to direct it.
Okay. That seems like it's going to be wildly different.
And also at one point, John Landis is going to direct this, like just wildly different. Sense. That does it. I can't imagine Scorsese doing this.
Has Scorsese
ever
done anything close to a musical, like maybe parts of Wolf of Wall Street?
I
don't know.
But. I mean, didn't he do like the band move like after the Last Waltz?
Okay, there you go.
Frank Oz wanted Marlon Brando to play. Speaking of, you know, mafia guys, like, I don't know how to transition this, but whatever.
Well, how about the Coppola podcast that I do?
Truly,
with Brian
wanted Marlon Brando to play Mushnick. Oh. Geffen was like, no, that guy is difficult to work with.
He should have played the plant. Like,
well, it was the Four Tops guy. But so then eventually Frank Oz makes the score in 2001. He cast Brando, and was a pain in the ass on that set. Like, it was his last movie, and he was just like a real asshole. So, you know, he was right.
I know that movie mostly from Conan O'Brien early on making fun of it.
But the final bit of trivia, then we can talk about the movie itself, is this is a kind of a cool thing. So this movie and Aliens, the sequel, were shot on adjacent sets at the same time in England at Pinewood Studios, which, Mike, you might know as the 007 stage, which is built for The Spy Who Loved Me. This movie cost $7 million more to make than Aliens, which is kind of crazy.
That's insane to think about, too.
That's wild.
Okay.
But then a very weird little add-on bit of trivia that is especially important to this podcast. James Remar, Agent Markham himself, had a prop gun loaded with real ammo accidentally on Aliens and fired.
Alec Baldwin was there?
His gunshot blew a hole in the Little Shop set, but nobody was hurt.
Oh, wow. Like, I heard James Remar got removed from Aliens eventually because of drugs or something like that. But
that's why he's cracking down on Carter Verone so much.
He had to go pick up the drug dealer in Miami.
Yes. Okay. So that's all the trivia. That's a lot of me rambling. I want to hear Joe first. What did you think of? So I think when Josh and Michael introduced this lab, they said they picked this one because they know how much you love musicals, and they wanted to pick a musical for you. So what did you think of Little Shop of Horrors?
I think that the practicality, the sets.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that did not have a sing-along was awesome, and I think all of the music was straight fucking trash. I hated everything of all the songs,
every
genres.
Single song?
I don't think one of
Even
them was
feed
good.
Me. Feed
Even
me.
Feed me. Nothing, dude. None of them hit for me at all.
Wow.
Zero, 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 zero. I like the genres that they're in too. I really tried to give them a chance. There's like parts where like, and I also love the plot. So like eventually Rachel had told me that there was an original movie that wasn't a musical. I was like, I bet that's fucking awesome for me. Like that's exactly what I wanted to see. Like if I could just watch this movie without any of the music, I would be like very, very excited for it. But like the, no, I'm not a musical person.
Maybe that's what they'll do with the new one. Maybe they'll ditch the music with the new one.
If it was like full movie, I was like, dude, there's so much I do love about this. And like, they don't even let it breathe at some points. It's just like song to fucking song to fucking song to fucking. I'm like, just God damn it. Just shut up for one fucking second. But other than that, I actually did really enjoy the movie. I need to go back and watch the version without music.
Well, especially since Roger Corman, like, I don't know if it's going to be good, but it'll be. I'm interested to see if you. I've never seen that. I remember.
I've never
when...
seen it.
Because I never saw this movie before 2 years ago, and I remember, like, when I was going to watch one of these, I was like, which one's the right one to watch? Everybody's just like, no, the 80s one. Like, nobody watches the original one. Like, it's just a thing that exists.
Should I
like,
watch it, Mike, considering you just said that you knew about it? Does it sound like I would like it? Is it, like, vastly different? Tell me a little bit about it.
I mean, the bare bones and the everything, and the plot and the characters, it's all there. It's all exactly the same. It's basically, like, this... is that with color because it's in black and white and music, but you know it's more like an old Universal horror film. It's like an hour long, right?
Okay,
like it doesn't exactly have the best production value. All right, you're gonna have to like sure. It's probably best that you saw this one first because you can like use your imagination. You know,
fair. Understood.
Imagine
yeah.
what you're watching within the context of like the more recent movie. But I still like the original. I think the original, it's all there. So I think the problem with it is how quickly and cheaply it had to be made, right? If that script got into like, you know, Warner Brothers or Paramount around that time, I'm sure they would have made it too, because yeah, I would check it out for sure.
Cool. Okay. And also then I got very disappointed because Rachel told me, as you said, the guy that wrote like all the music for this and did all the Disney movies later mm-hmm. wrote Newsies. And I was like, did he just save all the good songs for Newsies? Because I love Newsies.
I cannot pin down anything about you and musicals other than you hate almost all of them. Like, I get that. But like the rest, I just none of it makes sense to
no,
me.
No, we just rewatched Barbie. And I'm like, and Rachel's like, Barbie is a musical. I was like, I love this. It's a good musical. Like, the songs are good. Like, if they just,
well,
like, don't.
Okay. I think Barbie to me is more of like a rock opera. But I'll get into my semantics about all this
okay,
after.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not a musical fan. There's like a. I told you, it's the jazz hands of it all that, like, just doesn't hit for me. Also, there was, like, a period where, like, a lot of people I know that were theater kids were really into Little Shop of Horrors, and I was like, I don't trust your taste at all. And I was right about a lot of that part of it. But in the same sense, like, this has everything I should love. Like, the cast is great. It looks beautiful. I agree with all those other things. Just if I could just cut the music out and we could have just made it a full story, I would have been like, wow, this is probably one of my favorite movies ever.
I do think that this movie is a really good example of, like, that's exactly what I thought I was going to be. You know what I mean? Where it's not like the type of theater kid who likes this and you being worried about like their taste. It's like, no, that this confirms like it's kind of the movie that
yes.
you thought it was going to be, right?
100%. Yeah, yeah.
Like the same thing with like, have you seen you? I don't, we probably talked about this. Have you seen, do you also hate Rocky Horror?
I've never seen Rocky Horror for the exact same reason.
Yeah, you would also, if you hate this, you would also hate that.
I don't know. I think thematically,
really?
Yeah, because Rocky Horror is like way kinkier and super like
patrons,
sex,
you know what you gotta do.
And the music is, that's a rock opera. Like
Rachel said it. Rachel said it's weirder.
It's,
and yeah. I said, is it weirder theater kid weirder? Or is it weirder, like actually weirder? And I don't
know. No,
think
it's more
ever...
subversive. It's trying to do, it's more daring. This is just kind of, this is being like goofy. Like that's like trying to like progress,
provocative
like,
and stuff.
Social
yeah.
kind of.
It's almost, I don't want to say it's just like if John Waters was able to make a musical and was British, something like that. Maybe. I mean, because it's perverted, right? But like that's kind of the point, to embrace the queer and the weird and all
yeah.
that kind of stuff. And plus it's just generational, like this is very like 50s 40s 50s kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
aesthetic
yeah.
Rocky Horror is like more 70s, 80s, you know, like the music is just different. You know, I think it just might ring your ear a little better.
Fair. And to be honest, I have a confession to make that I thought that this was a sequel to Rocky Horror.
That this movie?
Yeah, I thought that Rocky Horror and Little Shop were like somehow in the same universe for like in my brain. Nobody's ever said that to me.
That's wild.
But because I've always like linked people liking them together, I thought they were just like of the same ilk.
But that would make sense nowadays to use the horror part as the connective tissue between a universe of movies, right? You know, it's like this or that of horror, that and this of horror, the horror.
Yes,
of
yeah,
whatever.
Like the titling felt similar. Yes, yes, yes.
I could see that. Has anyone seen the cartoon? There was a cartoon, Little Shop of Horrors, that ran for a while.
Oh, no. That would be fun, though.
I think it was very weird.
So I think there is something, you know, Joe, you were saying that, like, you like the genres and everything. Like, I think there's something very difficult. So all lap long, Mike, we are also picking our most 80s moment about each of the movie. And I think it's very weird to do that in a movie that is basically like, hey, we're doing the 50s. Like we're consciously like not doing 80s stuff. Like there is 80s stuff, but it's like we are doing music and stylings and everything to make this 50s, look like it's a movie and a thing from the 50s.
Yeah.
And I know that's not rare, but it's strange to do our kind of conversation starter for a movie that's just like not 80s baby. But if you had to pick, Mike, what is, and if you want time to think about it, Joe can go first. If you had to pick what's the most 80s element of Little Shop of Horrors, what stands out to you most 80s thing about this movie?
Thing, person, anything, vibe, saying, anything. Anything, anything that makes you feel 80s about it.
Oh, man. That is a tough question about a movie that is a period piece, pretty much, right?
I have a few.
All right, you go for it. I might have one or two.
I think firstly littering, very 80s.
Mm-hmm. Throwing
trash on the ground. Very 80s to me. Plastic furniture, very 80s. Plastic on your furniture.
Okay.
But I think my pick for most 80s thing of this movie is when she's imagining her green dream house. They have a Tupperware party inside.
Yes, that's it. Yeah,
the Tupperware party.
Tupperware party. So I agree with that one.
That felt the most 80s to me. Joey, did you have a pick?
Well, I had sort of similar in terms of just like things that remind me, like retail shopping feels very 1980s, like consumerism.
Oh,
just
yes.
Going to brick and mortar.
That's true. And I also had wearing a tie and vest to work in a flower shop felt very 80s.
But my number one most 80s thing, Rick Moranis.
Nailed it. That's very,
King
very
of the
good.
The most 80s thing about this movie is Rick Moranis. Because
that's a very good answer.
Like Ghostbusters and this and Spaceballs and Ghostbusters 2 and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Streets of Fire. And
understood.
Parenthood. Like he was the 80s.
On a run. He was on a run for sure.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I was going to go with something like cast wise as well. Because like one of the three girls in the like the choir, I think maybe even two of them, but one especially I knew was in House Party and the show Martin. So I don't know if Martin was the 90s, but she was just kind of not taking me out of it. But I was like, oh, OK, like that reminds me that this isn't. You know, this wasn't made in the 50s.
Well, apparently they're basically like a Greek chorus, like just like, you know, progressing the story, talking to the audience, explaining what's going on, whatever.
Yeah.
Not in the musical. Like they were added for the movie to make more sense, I think. Or that might be not exactly right, but they're like their presence has been altered or shifted or enhanced or whatever for this as opposed to in, you know, other versions of the story, which is, like, they're so kind of core to, like, moving things along that I can't really picture it without it, but, like...
On that note, I did finish this movie, and because of how well the movie's made, I was like, I really want to see a stage production version of this. Obviously not for the music, but just to see, like, how do you do some of the things that they have in the film, and, like, what were they getting from it? I'm fast... Like, whenever Rachel drags me to one of these things, I have to, you know, like find something good to focus on. So, like, I am hyper fascinated by, like, stage and, like, the production of a musical and, like, just the logistics. How does this work? And so there was many things that I was watching. I was like, Rachel, like, how did they do the plant, like, like, on a stage? And she's like, she explained, you know, there's puppets and whatever, whatever. It's, like, very similarly. And I was like, oh, I want to see that happen. Like, I want to see that happen in front of me.
I see, yeah. It's also, it's my understanding that Ellen Green, is it? Audrey? Yep. Her husband was one of the operators of the plant and also worked on, like, Jabba the Hutt and things like that.
So, oh,
like,
very cool. All,
I thought that was funny how, like, she's married to the plant in real life.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I agree. Like, I would have loved to have had the opportunity to see. I know my dad saw this, and he came home and he told me, like, you know, the plant, like, the vines grow into the audience and they come up, like,
very
in
cool.
the rows, like, next
see,
to the
that's
chairs
sick. Yeah.
and everything, and they just start rolling out all over by the end, and the plant becomes, like, enormous. So there's probably a lot of, like, awesome puppetry going on.
Yeah, that would be cool to see.
It's
yeah.
so impressive. Like, it's so cool and so good, and, like,
I'm just so worried the new one's going to be all computer generated or like.
I don't think they can. I think that listen to what we're talking about. I think that if they did that, there would just be like a riot, right? Like they have
to
try to maintain.
They want.
I mean, I think having Joe Dante do it bodes maybe well, right?
Yeah, so. Better than most, I'd say.
Somebody want to tell me the real ending? The other ending,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, well, first, let me. Can I?
Come
before,
on.
We've got to tease that
please.
Out just a little more. I need.
Okay.
To, I just need to reply to Joe's kind of like, as much as he didn't like this movie, I'm kind of shocked. I don't. It's not
oh,
that
no,
you're
I'm not. I'm not at all. Like 8 minutes, and I'm just like, Joe probably fucking hates this movie.
When it went song to song from the beginning, I was like, I'm in for a fucking.
I mean, but that like that
here.
Is musical. Like that is a musical.
I hate
like,
that. That's the part that I hate about it.
But
like,
that's not even
else,
most.
Like,
This is relentless. I will agree. Yeah. But I think that's what's so kind of cool and original about this particular one is that like you need the songs to propel the plot.
I don't think you do.
No, I mean, you could
say they made
say
a version
it.
Without them.
You're no, okay.
They literally started from a version without it.
I just find them so much fun and so catchy and like they're so well staged.
That's the thing. I didn't find any of them catchy.
All right.
Like if the songs would have hit, like I could have been turned and like I've been singing I'm Just Ken in my head all fucking day. Like it's not like I don't get it.
I'm a dentist. I've been singing that I'm a fucking dentist at work and shit.
That's awesome. But like yeah, for me I was
dentist.
Yeah, we got to mix it up. We got to combine it somehow. But
So the ending that you saw, the director's cut, is the musical version wherein Audrey is mortally wounded by Audrey 2.
Yes.
And she is fed to Audrey 2.
Yes.
To live forever with
Rick Moranis.
Seymour.
Yes.
Yes. Paul Dooley comes up and is just like, we're going to bring Audrey 2 everywhere. And he's just like, we can't do this. Like,
he has a clipping too. He's like, we're going to package it like this and everything. Yep. And he's already got one.
And it like smiles at him. Yeah.
And so Rick Moranis, Seymour is just like, we can't do this. He goes back inside. He tries to kill Seymour and is eaten by Seymour and killed by Seymour. And so then the, you know, manufacturing consumerism becomes super popular. Everyone all across America gets an Audrey 2. And all the Audrey 2s, because they are mean green mothers from outer space, grow up to basically eat
Sick.
Entire cities and
awesome.
Conquer
yeah,
the world.
They become
this
kaiju.
Was great. Loved
kaiju
it.
Kaiju Audreys.
It was very Godzilla. Yes,
I
love
this.
Yeah, I love this too.
So they show this. That's this is what's called the original ending. It's not just the director's cut. It's the original ending.
I also feel like it's all the footage that they shot, like a full assembly. Like I think if we got it in theaters, it would have been cut back a little bit because it kind of goes... I mean, the version I used to watch goes on and on and on.
Well, it's actually, like, I thought it was, so it's, how much is it? It's like,
they go into like
40 minutes maybe are kind of different. Like, it's a lot, like, it's from 75 minutes on, or maybe not,
everything
no, maybe
from
last,
where
like,
Audrey,
hour,
from where Audrey goes to minutes. Feed, when Seymour goes out to, like, buy meat, and Audrey gets coaxed in to go feed
Yeah, when
Audrey
he calls,
too.
Yeah, he yeah. calls, yeah.
So, like, it's like 20 or 25 minutes, which is, it's, like
that's
completely
a lot
different.
That's a lot.
So
like the third act, yeah.
Film this. They show this to test audiences. Test audiences hate it. So Joe, you're gonna hate this so much.
Okay.
So instead, what the original ending is,
the theatrical ending,
not
the original.
The theatrical, yes. The new ending. Sorry, the original one that people saw for the movie.
That Mike saw whatever. In theaters by
yes.
himself in the row,
six
old
years
people
old
behind him. Yeah.
Rick Moranis comes back. Seymour comes back, finds Audrey in the plant's mouth, saves Audrey.
Okay, cool.
She's at back. He goes back inside. He's like losing the fight to Seymour or to Audrey.
Well, the guy comes also. Like they start singing suddenly Seymour and he's like, hold on, stop singing. I got to taste.
But it's Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're going to package Audrey too. We're going to sell it across the country. Everyone's going to have it. Same story, except instead of Audrey one being dead and Seymour being suicidal, like they're like safe in the back alley, sort of.
Okay.
And so he's like, I have to save the world. I need to go kill Audrey too. So he goes inside and he's like losing the battle, and then he pulls an electrical cable and shocks and destroys Audrey too, blows up the shop. He survives. They then cut to her Barbie dream house of her dreams.
Okay.
They are married. They walk in, end of the day, happy ending. And then they cut to the sort of like the hedge line, and there's a little Audrey too, little plant just like smiling, bobbing around there. So like Mike was saying, there's still this idea that like it's still going to
happen,
but for the interim, it's a happy ending where they are married, they are living together.
Yes, a different green place.
Yes,
I think that I might have liked that better.
Really?
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's kind of cool when like Audrey too brings the entire shop down on Seymour and thinks he's dead, and then he grabs the wire, you know, so because the whole place has come down, like things are flying all over and
chaos.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I need to, now I need to see that version to see.
Cause there's no more of the song either. Like that whole don't feed the plants like that. They cut that whole shit. Like,
well, yeah. So somewhere that's green reprise and the original ending is cut. So there's suddenly Seymour reprise instead. There's still Mean Green Mother from Outer Space there, but finale don't feed the plants is gone. Right. So it's basically when he bursts back in the door from the grocery store, like that from the rest of the movie is different. So, I mean, you can like watch like the last.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, because
the theatrical ending is also shorter. It's like 10 minutes shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
OK.
Even Mean Green Mother is sort of truncated a little bit as well.
But
interesting.
Okay. Still Academy Award nominated.
Yeah, I don't hate that ending. That sounds interesting to me. Maybe that I don't know.
It's all about story for Joe, which I like, you know? It's like, that could work and that could work, you know?
Can either of you name what song, and this is more for Mike because Joe doesn't know years, what song won Best Original Song, the Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1986?
Is it the one from Beaches?
No, Mike, it's from a movie that we have podcasted about.
Oh.
1986.
Hanks?
Mm-mm.
Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Rebecca De Mornay on a train having sex?
No, that's 1983.
Oh, shit, so close. Danger Zone? I don't know.
Right movie, wrong song.
Oh, okay. What was the other
song? Eye of the Tiger.
No, Top Gun.
I know. What is it? Shit.
It is a sex scene, though. It's a sex scene song.
It's the slow one. Damn, I can't remember.
Dun, 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 dun.
The one, Take My Breath Away.
Take My Breath Away.
There we go.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Crazy. Yeah. I think this song's better.
Take My Breath Away was like an original song for Top Gun.
Yeah,
that's weird. I didn't know. Is that what
did that feel? Does that feel right to you? To anybody else?
No, it feels very unright.
Well, no, there's a lot. There's a lot of songs that are like that was written for that movie. It's very weird. In 1999, just to go back to Blame Canada, it lost to You'll Be in My Heart by Phil Collins for Tarzan, which is, you know.
Yeah, but I knew Phil Collins did.
Yeah.
I knew Phil Collins did. Are you making it? Was that a joke or are you serious?
No, I've never seen Tarzan, but I know that.
What?
It's really good. It's really
Tarzan's a musical that's fucking great.
I never saw that until we did it on the podcast before I left that podcast.
Dude, Phil Collins showed his whole ass writing the themes for Tarzan. Like, it is so fucking good. Like, the whole soundtrack is fire. Oh. It is all so good. All the songs hit. I love that movie. I can watch it on loop.
And you would also like it, Mike, because they modeled it, like they're like swinging around in vines and like surfing on vines, and they like modeled it after like skateboarders and stuff. Like it's a very cool animation.
Oh,
style.
Okay. I could also see maybe Spider-Man like influence in that, maybe like swinging on vines. But that's cool.
But yeah, I can never like they just like called Phil Collins. They're like, hey, you want to write this like the songs for this movie? And he's like, oh yeah, I got like 20 bangers that I've just been saving.
He's for up an animated for Genesis to get back together.
Yeah, essentially. he just crushed, like, every, you're gonna listen to it and you're gonna be like, oh my god, these were all like actual hits, like, it's incredible. All
right,
so here is one bit of Too Fast trivia. At least I'm going back, I think there's only two movies we have covered for this podcast have won Best Original Song at the Oscar. Can you name either of them?
Barbie. Oh, we not for, not for Too Fast. Yeah,
different podcast. Same show, different podcast.
Same, yeah, exact. Same
in the
show.
40s, there were 10 nominees.
Well, they probably made more musicals back then too. That was like the Bubsy Berkeley era.
And here is a hint, Joe. We covered both Last Lap and the Planes, Trains, but No Automobiles Lap. Both movies that won Best Original Song at the Oscars. We covered Last Lap.
That's wild.
That's insane. I don't know. No, I have no idea.
One from the 90s and one from this decade, one from the 2020s. The 90s one is the biggest song of the 90s.
Holy shit. Did you guys do
the biggest song of all time?
Did you do Titanic recently?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
My Heart Will Go On is one of them.
My Heart Will. Okay, yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
And then one movie that won 2 years ago. So this year was Barbie. No, actually, it won last year. It won last year. This year was Barbie, What Was It Made For? By Billie Eilish and Phineas.
Yeah.
Last year's winner in a movie we covered, Last Lap.
I don't know. What was last year's winner? Mike, what was it?
I can't remember.
From a, it's, there's a iconic dance number that is tied to this.
It's not La La Land, thank Mm-mm. God.
Nope.
Okay. Well, that wasn't last
year. Also,
year.
Wasn't last year. That also wasn't this
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
The dance scene this year was in Poor Things. That was like the dance scene.
La La Land did win Best Song, City of Stars. It was also nominated for Audition. Did not win that.
And it's
Trash
Jeff.
Song, Trash Movie. Both. Yeah.
Save Jen.
What was the song last year, bud?
Not You from RRR.
Oh, oh shit.
You know that's still playing in theaters in Japan? Like, I just read an article.
They're just hype on it?
Dude, they're
really?
So down. Oh. Like, and theaters are packed.
I don't think I realized that Billie Eilish won for No Time to Die, too. So she won two out of 3 years. I mean, deservingly, because those are two great songs, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's nice.
This is funny that, so we talked about the cast, and I read a really interesting like tidbit tweet or something today that was Martin Short said like recently or just came up recently that like he was like, I once went to Steve Martin's house and he had like these Picassos and like all these like luxurious paintings and stuff. And I was like, Steve, this is crazy. I don't know. I never knew you had this much money. Like, I've seen your work.
What?
And I was like, good one. Excellent.
I think this is the only movie and time that I've seen Steve Martin without gray hair. This movie, he's got the black.
This, it's dyed, right? It's not like this is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh wait,
like, even like in The Jerk in the 70s, yeah.
I think maybe in he reteams with Rick Moranis in My Blue Heaven. He's sort of got the brown hair in that. That's a great movie.
The unofficial sequel to Goodfellas.
Yeah.
It is so funny when he shows up, though, when, like, Audrey's, like, beat up and she's, like, got black eyes and just, like, my boyfriend's so bad, but, like,
and they,
you know,
cut to Steve Martin. Yes.
And they cut to Steve Martin on a motorcycle. Just, like, it's pretty good.
I like that. But then, see, the thing that, like, I don't like about theater stuff is, like, that, like, he's playing, like, a biker. And I think it would hit even better if he wasn't so silly. You know what
but
I
that's
mean?
The point.
Like,
yeah.
I know. That's the jazz handsification of it.
Oh,
like, if
I hear
Steve
you.
Martin would have played like a hard ass biker, I think that would have been funnier to me.
I feel
him
you.
Playing it straight would have been like way funnier, knowing that like it's Steve Martin playing it straight than him playing silly. And then like he could eventually gotten into being the dentist, which I also think is a great joke, hilarious.
Yeah,
like he could have been sillier when he like transitioned there, but like him starting out with like being a silly biker, I was like, okay.
I hear you. I think once he steps into that office though and talks about what a sadist he is, and he gets off
that's
on
fun.
Pain, and
Absolutely, the
sort of
hilarious.
Contrast between like the type of character he is, but like the things he's saying, and then like the one of the scenes where he's really scary is when he meets Seymour and he's trying to guess his name, and Audrey like tells him it's Seymour, and he's like turns on her and he's like, I told you to like shut the fuck up, bitch, you know. And it's like, holy yeah. shit, Steve Martin, like where did that come from? And he like does that like off, like, you know, I feel like he's switching it on and off, but I feel what you're saying. But to me, the the concept that he's enjoying it so much, being like he's almost like the Riddler or some shit, or like, or the Joker. Maybe that's where I'm getting at. It's like he's enjoying like all this infliction of
this part. Pain, I love of this. Pain. I love this part of that. I'm wholly with you. It's the other half of the like bust through the saloon doors yeah. in a biker jacket, but is also Steve Martin being a funny guy that I'm like.
It's tough because everything has to sort of be almost cartoonishly elevated to accept the reality of Audrey 2. Like, if we're going to have to believe a talking plant, and if the character of Seymour is going to believe it within a minute and like completely and fully like accept it as soon as it starts talking because of the things it's saying, like we as the audience have to be like right there with it. So I think like by the time the plant starts talking, everything has sort of been like building in this almost like elaborate way, like character wise. Yeah. Cause even Audrey 1 is like a cartoonish version of a, you know, of like a pinup mm-hmm. or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. For me, that's how I feel like it works.
I will say that when Steve Martin is in like the gas mask, he looks like he's from Fury Road. Like he looks like he is.
Absolutely does. 100%.
Man, that new trailer looks amazing. Can't wait for Furiosa.
Joe, was there stuff about, I mean, I know that you said you hated all the music and you liked all the non-music, but like, is there stuff about this like that you loved? Like, what was your favorite part or favorite parts of this movie? Or is it hard to say because there's just so much music?
No. I was watching, like, so I think they did an excellent job of something that I don't think that you see very often, is that like when you get a musical adaptation of a movie, which I've actually seen a bunch of, that like to make it somehow still look like musical sets, mm-hmm. but also like play well on screen, I think is a very difficult thing to do. Like specifically, I'm like remembering like when she runs out of the shop or something and Audrey 1 like puts her head against like the bricks and all the bricks are like perfectly like dug out to give her like a nice corner to like hide into. I was like, this is amazing set design. There was a lot of things that I loved. I like the coloring of it. I do like how silly it is too. Like I like the, like I just thought Steve Martin would play better if he played straight from the beginning and then like kind of like transitioned into silly. And I just love the cast, like the whole cast, and like John Candy popping in was great. And like I wasn't expecting any of these people that like show up. Bill Murray for like that 1 minute, I was like, oh my god, yes, perfect. Like, and they actually like cut them in really well. Like you were saying, like when it's like they're talking about like her scary boyfriend, and it kind of like just like the way they drop in Steve Martin is excellent. Like, because you're not ready for somebody like this to, like it could play like there could be like a really scary bad guy, right? Like you don't know until you see Steve Martin's face that you're like, oh, this is funny. So like,
yeah.
Like, no, I think they did so many things well. It was just like, please stop threatening me with these songs.
Like, meanwhile, I'm listening to the soundtrack at work, like mopping the floor. Like,
yeah, Mike, do you have a favorite song?
Skid Row.
Yeah.
Do I have a favorite song? I mean, I love Phoebe.
Mike, do you like all musicals? Or is this one that really hits for you? That's what I'm saying. Like, now I'm confused.
I'm actually quite hit or miss with musicals. Like, to be honest, it's not that I love them all. Like, I like the ones I like. I don't know how else to really... I like older ones. Like, I used to watch in college Bubsy Berkeley movies, and he directed like 42nd Street and the Gold Diggers of 33, and like these really old, elaborate, where you would get like the unison dancing and kicking and the swim dancing and all kinds of crazy
shit.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem to bother me either. Like that feels like more like early film, like, you know what I mean? Like when they're trying to transitioning like to making.
Yeah, the point was to have a visual feast component, you know, as yeah. well as an audio one, so like it was more surreal. I guess I like the ones that are more surreal, perhaps talking plants as opposed to like Hairspray, you know. Like I like the original Hairspray because it was about like the music of the times, but
hold on. You remember who you're talking to here. We covered the Zac Efron starring remake of Hairspray, which is, I'll say, a perfect movie.
Okay, I have to re-see it then. I have to rewatch.
It's not a perfect movie.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. Well,
but Miss Baltimore Crabs, good song.
I will say, like, there's musicals, though, and then there's rock operas, which I love because they scare the shit out of me, you know?
Like Phantom of the Paradise?
Phantom of Paradise is one of the few where like I can watch with my eyes open the entire time. But I mean, like the Apple or like Repo, the Genetic Opera.
See, like the Apple, I fucking Tommy, love too, dude.
Like yeah. The Wall,
Tommy, The Wall, down. I love all of these.
Quadrophenia is not a rock opera.
Okay, well, what about The Wiz? That's Quadrophenia
is just
shit.
A sad boy on a bicycle.
The Wiz, like, I do is... not like The Wiz,
dude. See, like a lot of those movies scare the hell out of me. If they unnerve me, but I love to watch them because of that. Like. Those are horror movies to me, you know? And I feel like this kind of just hit my sweet spot between like, oh, well, it's supposed to be a scary movie. So if I'm feeling that unnerved vibe, like that's good. It's intentional here. It's not like The Apple where they want me to think like everything is like hunky-dory most, you know, like, oh, BIM marks, cool, whatever. No, get that off my forehead. You know, this just hit a lot of like my likes, I guess. You know, I just
cool. No,
you
know, that really, I was just trying to figure out Mike Manzi, not yeah. that well, I was trying to
so like also pushed like very hard in my childhood were the Muppets. So
I love the Muppets.
And Sesame Street. So like I was like and you know, I'm like a monster guy, so like I was used to monsters already at this age, and this was
so it blended them very yeah. nicely. Yeah.
I kind of saw Audrey too as like you know, someone who lived down the street from Big Bird, you're right, but you wouldn't go, wouldn't really go there. Or like when you watch Fraggle Rock, like the, you know, the trolls or something, like there's good puppets and there's scary puppets. So like, you know, on a lot of levels, this just like, you know, I was able to comprehend it, I suppose.
That's really cool. I like that. Like, I also love the Muppets. Rachel had never grown up with the Muppets, which is really funny. Like I introducing to her maybe since pandemic or something, and so we watched
a lot
of
movie for this podcast.
That's wild, man, because they're like the ultimate theater
musicals
kids. Theater
exactly
kids, like they're like all
and I love them and I love all the songs and like I sing along, and she's like, these are just musicals. I was like, yeah, but they're good like the music is good in the Muppets musicals, and like in there, and like those ones are like super catchy to me. Like they the earworm as soon as I hear them, I'm like, boom, stuck in my brain. Yep, I sing that all day, and yeah. So like it, I don't know. I think I really like the music just needs to resonate deeply within me, and if it doesn't, then I'm instantly out.
I mean that makes sense, but it seems like most musical music does not resonate with you.
I don't have a better word for it, but the jazz handsification of the music really irks me, like, internally. Like, I really, really don't like it. And, like, as soon as I start seeing it, I'm like, ugh! And, like, my brain just turns off. I'm like, I don't want this.
I feel like, in retrospect now, thinking about it, like, this movie does not present... It's presented like a play, almost, you know, like the acting is play acting, which is different than movie acting. So I think there might be like a bit of like a brain warp at some point where it's like, why are they acting like this? Like, it's a movie, you know, but it's only
I like the play
they're
acting.
Like filming a play is how this felt, you know, like they're reaching the people in the back, but like we're sitting right in the front row. So a lot of it can just be like, can feel like a lot.
Joe, any other thoughts, any other notes about Little Shop of Horrors?
Rachel was worried I was really going to hate her voice. I often have problems with people that have interesting voices.
Like the Harley Quinn voice of...
yeah. I didn't actually hate this one. Like, it seems like it kind of tones down as it goes along. Like, when it came out, I was like, this is going to be torturous. And then, like, not really too much. And also, this is funny that you were saying you were trying to figure out what musicals I like, Joey, because Rachel, as we were talking about this at lunch today, she was like, there's a girl who has a very interesting voice in this, and I can't tell if you're going to hate it or love it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, and I was like, I like Fran Drescher. Like, she doesn't bother me, and she bothers a lot of people, right? Like, that's like a notorious one. And she was like, I can't pin down which ones you hate or like. And I was like, me neither. Like, it just hits or doesn't. And if it doesn't, then I'm like, I never want to hear that person speak again.
Honestly, the fact that you keep me and Rachel both guessing about what you like and what you don't like, I mean...
When you've both known me for so fucking long, I don't know how either. But I also don't know how... I'd like stuff or don't like stuff myself, so it's unhelpful.
Yeah. Mike, other thoughts, other notes, anything else? I mean, not to rush, but
yeah, no.
Anything else you want to say?
I love the whole thing, you know, and I look forward to watching it again.
Did you watch for this go round? Did you watch both endings, or which ending did you watch this time?
I didn't have time to watch the like original ending. I watched the theatrical cut for this. I watched it before work today. So I just managed to squeeze it in, and that was great. I think my favorite sequence is like the Steve Martin introduction, just because it's like such a, you like, you could just take that and be like, here's what
it's
Steve
almost
Martin
a short film
do.
Or something.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Right. And then I think actually he might be my favorite part of the fucking movie. Like, I don't know. There's just something about also the scene between him and Bill Murray. And then immediately after that, him and Seymour.
Bill Murray being in this, I think, is my favorite part. Not to derail you, Mike, but
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. Cause like the sort of like dynamic switching between like present, like the way he acts towards Bill Murray and the way Bill Murray sort of like resists him or is like into him, and then the way that like he's gonna take that out on Seymour, but then Seymour's there to kill him. Like, there's a lot of interesting things going on during those moments for story wise. I'm into the whole thing. I hope the new one is good. You know,
if it gets made, I mean, it feels like the kind of thing that like they keep trying to make and then they don't actually make.
Yeah,
but you know,
I think personally, if you were to ask me why this keeps getting stalled, is because they're trying to write new songs for it somehow. Mm. But I think the way to go is to ditch the songs for the new version. I want to see that. I would like to see a nice, clean, modern version of the original. You know, like
I agree.
Take all the
100%.
Songs and make it dialogue. And let's see if that works. Or add some new characters, take it off Skid Row, make him more popular. Let's get a little more like worldwide. Let's get that original ending back and have the plants take over the world.
Because contrary to what you say, Mike, like that you thought that the music moves the story, I don't think that the story needed any music, in my opinion. So like that's why I really am like when they put it in, it feels like it's like just stacked on something that I already like, and I'm like, I wouldn't mind a song in it or something like that, but like just like the constant forcing of the musical into it, it's just like it's just fitting too much into one can for me. Like, I don't think that it needs it.
Well, let's watch the trailer. I don't know how this sold it, but it's Little Shop of Horrors, 1986 official trailer, Steve Martin, Bill Murray comedy musical HD, posted by our friends at Rotten Tomatoes Classic Trailers. Top comment: I used to be scared of this when I was younger, and now that I look back, I don't blame myself in the slightest. 2 minutes and 4 seconds. Let me know when you guys are ready to watch.
I'm queued up and ready whenever you guys are.
And so am I.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play.
There's that piano.
Piano's great.
It all began in this little shop.
Ow! Damn roses.
Where, strange as it seems, something...
Okay, this song I do like.
Well, we could have the one song, the title
That's
song.
That's what I mean. If this was just like the title song in the movie, love it.
Like, I wonder if they're going to sell this as a musical or hide it like they did Wonka.
My guess...
here we go.
...would be that, Joe, you would like more of the songs if it weren't wall-to-wall songs.
I think I might, too. Yeah, if they would have cut them back some. Yep.
I could see that. Do half the songs. Oh, he's going to eat that butt.
Mike, this is a family show.
Sorry. It's a very horny movie. That's some dress.
Did I say that one of my first notes was this shop, his shop, the flower shop, has fewer customers than Toretto's Market and Cafe? Like, it just like, no one was there.
It's a front. I also love how there's like no flowers, and then when Christopher Guest comes in, they have every flower they need.
I think I need a root canal.
Yeah.
I'm sure I need a long, slow root canal.
Man, I wish that we could have like met Bill Murray at like his cocaine height.
Well, apparently there was another trivia thing that like he, after Ghostbusters, had made so much money, like Ghostbusters was so successful that he's just like, I'm gonna retire from acting, like I don't need to act anymore. He had to get like talked back into doing this cameo, and I think this kind of like
reinvigorated him.
Yeah, I heard like doing Scrooge was like pulling teeth to get him to do a comedy because he just wanted to like hang out or something. Like, he was, yeah, like Joey said, like he just didn't think movies were
fucking rich, bro. Yeah,
or something. But
amazing.
Yeah, that all feels like they riffed it too. But all right.
Yeah, I mean, like that's a pretty accurate representation.
That's a dead-on trailer of what this movie is.
I'm actually,
yes, I agree.
I'm surprised. Like, I thought that they were going to hide more music like they do. Like, nowadays, that's the whole thing. This
what
last
was the
year.
Mean, Rachel was just talking about Mean Girls, that they had, like, sold the Mean Girls trailers with no music. And she's like, she was dying. She was like, I know that this is a musical, and they're just selling this as, like, a remake to Mean Girls. And then, like,
same
what
with
is
Wonka.
It?
And, like, same with Wonka. Music in Wonka was pretty awesome. They could have sold more tickets if they were like, here's two or three of the songs you're going to hear.
But recently they were like, oh, now that Mean Girls is, like, on VOD or whatever, they were like, Tina Fey hits every note in this. And we're like, is that the hint that it's a musical now? Like, they give
you
that?
Well, there's, I mean, look, in the trailer, there's Renee Rapp saying, my name is Regina George. Like, she's going into music. So, like, if you don't think it's, like, they're it might not be overt, but it's like.
Not like this, though, bud.
Why, no, not like this, but.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, this is like Rick Moranis sings and like Steve Martin sings.
Yeah.
Letterbox Game, for reference sake, Mad Max Fury Road has been seen by 1.8 million people.
Oh,
Little
God.
Shop of
Letterboxd
Horrors, 1986, directed
this.
By Frank Oz, starring Rick Moranis, Ellen Green, Vincent Gardenia, and Levi Stubbs, has been seen by how many people?
So many people.
Chad, do you want to go first?
I got to start at like 400,000. That's my bar.
I was going to go even higher. I was going to say 580,000. Yeah.
You are both too high.
Oh,
gotta go lower.
Okay.
Okay. 225.
I'll go on the lower. So I'll say 150.
Now you're both too low. So somewhere between 225 and 400. One more guess.
317.
286.
261, ooh. 630, 261,000, average rating of a 3.8, most common a 4, then a 3.5, then a 5. How many of those 262,000 people have this in their top 4 favorite films of all time?
I think I've had it in mine at one point.
Well, I will say right now, none of my friends, because I always try, like, when there's a big number, this is a big number. When there's a big number, I always look to see it. And friends, I mean, just like people I follow on Letterboxd, even if it's like hard, I like to just do one of those. And like, we have not had one of those in a while, and still also not for this one either. But how many of those 262,000 people?
I think there's a lot of people like Mike that if they like this movie, they love this movie. It got to be like 5,700.
Wow. I was going to guess such a close number. I was going to say 53.
So just for reference, that means like you think 2% of people who have seen this movie have this in their top. Four,
I think that there's a significant. Okay, so what are we gonna do? 500. It's usually 0.1, but yeah, I think that it's gonna be a fucking insane number.
It is an insane
2,
number,
000.
But you're both too high. It's lower than 5,000.
1.2 thousand, 1,200.
1.2. Love that number. You say one thousand, like
1,200,
1,200.
12. So Mike, just so you know, when it's over 1,000, they don't do. Tens or ones. It's just like it's a
1.2. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is why Joe did the 1.2.
I think it's under. I think if that's too, if two is too high, I think it's under 1,000. So I'm gonna say like 895.
Well, now you are once again both too low. So somewhere between 1,200 and 5,000.
1,500.
I don't know. The 32.
3,200. Mike, spot
see,
on.
Holy
shit.
So my 5,000 number wasn't
no, man,
like
psychological
insane.
Warfare. I know.
No, it wasn't insane. I was very close.
I know. That's why I was just like making sure you realized and like, yeah, no, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I know that there had to be like a slew
of
people that love
this. Like the rough rule
of
thumb we usually do is 0.1%. So it quote unquote should be like 260 people. Okay. If this was a quote unquote normal movie, 260 people should have in the top four, but this has 10 times that, 12 times that.
And time plays into it very significantly too. Like if it's like a movie that just came out this year, people are like, oh, I really like this. Recency bias, right?
So or we just do, like oh, we did. Movie. It was the Zeff movie, right? That had a bunch.
Well, just, I mean, you know, when like Iron a Hall. Lot of times when an actor in a film passes away too, that'll go like, the screenings will go up and people will remember that and stuff. But
like, no, but this is, I think to Joe's jazz hands things like, this is like a lot of people be like, this movie's my personality, right? Like, it's just like,
yes,
this sums up everything I love. So we're going to go to one and only Anthony at one and only Anthony. He doesn't have like the easiest top four, but I'm not going to sift through 3,200 people.
Sounds
so
good.
He reviewed this 5 times. His most recent review from last July, this watch consisted exclusively of me bouncing up and down on the couch like a toddler to the tune of a man being swayed into premeditated murder. Thought about how Seymour finally defeats Audrey too, not with a gun or an axe, but with a sparking wire from the shop. So he watched the theatrical version.
He watched the theatrical,
fighting off the capitalist eating machine with something connected to his upbringing, to Skid Row, to the working class. Kind of neat. 10 out of 10.
Ooh. I think there's Anthony subtext. Gave this movie a lot of subtext.
The capitalistic eating machine of Audrey too.
Little Shop of Horrors is Anthony's number 4 favorite film of all time.
Back to the Future.
No. There is a movie
It just felt similar vibe.
There's a movie from the 80s, from the 2010s, and the 2020s. The movie from the 80s I mentioned very briefly earlier in the episode, and then Mike also very briefly mentioned it.
The Ghostbusters?
Godzilla.
No. 80s.
What else did you mention?
I don't know when
Risky Godzilla Business.
And Mike, you said if only Tom Cruise was written this movie.
Oh, shit. Look how bad my short-term memory is. It's terrible.
It's okay.
There is a sequel to this movie coming out this year.
Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
First pictures released today.
The sequel called Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah. And dude, that has like a fucking fire cast too, doesn't it? It's like they added Jenna Ortega, Kristen Hahn's back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it looks real. I'm down. I like Beetlejuice. Actually, last musical I went to go see on Broadway with Rachel was Beetlejuice, and it was also trash music. Terrible, terrible, terrible musical. Excellent sets, great costumes.
Did they just sing Deo?
Not like it.
Did they sing, is Deo in it?
They did, but there was literal Beetlejuice jazz hands, and I was like, I'm going to vomit.
So the shit like, say my name once, say my name twice, say my name one more time, I'm not nice. Beetlejuice, like that kind of
like thing. He literally did literally jazz hands.
Showtime.
Yeah, it was a lot of that, and I was like, just stop doing that. Stop doing that. I know that I'm at a musical. Stop it. You don't need to tell me that I'm at a musical. Stop.
All right, so the top two for one and only Anthony. Number one is a movie that Mike, you and I have podcasted about, and there is an iconic guitar in this movie from the 2010s. Iconic guitar. In this movie.
2010s.
I also have a poster of this movie hanging up in my house.
Well, you have 50,000 movie posters in
you actually
house.
Have a guitar no, but
this
hanging.
Is hanging up.
Okay.
Guitar. It's a poster
under my couch.
Would it happen to be Fury Road? There's an important guitarist in
there. Oh, that's a good guess, actually. I
the
like
Doof
that.
The Doof Warrior. No, it's not. But a similar aesthetically pleasing, cool guitar.
What is the other guitar? The 2010s.
That you podcasted about. So it's one of the shows that you guys did together, Mike. Cruise.
Yeah, Keanu. I know. Keanu has a lot of guitars in his movies.
Is it a Keanu
Bill
one?
Bill and Ted's.
No. Oh, that would have been a good guess, too. Yeah, Bill and Ted's would have been a good guess.
But that's not from 2010.
Yeah, true.
Plural.
Man, 2010s guitar.
Boy, I'm blanking. I'm going to need a little extra help.
John Wick? I don't know.
Mm-mm, it's not
you
Keanu.
Said not Keanu. Okay, you said not Keanu.
It's a period Charlize? Piece. This movie. Nope. This movie
Resident
was.
Resident historian. This is you, bud.
It takes place in the 80s.
It's a period piece that takes place in the 80s. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Are we there already? Gosh, damn.
The name of the movie is a character name. Mike, you and I both gave this movie 5 stars.
Oh, is this... This wasn't the... Is this the Hanks... Is this a Hanks movie?
Nope.
It's not? Okay, then... Never mind. I thought it was the one with Julia Roberts. Wasn't there a guitar in that? But no one likes that movie.
I believe this is a guitar. There's a chance that I'm... I know I'm pretty... Well...
Uh-oh. Could be throwing my entire thought process.
Is this a guitar? I think it's a guitar. We'll see.
Are you podcasting okay. from the club, Joey? You've got a light
No,
show.
It's Razor Trash. I've been watching my video, but it's okay. funny to see.
No, it makes you look so sultry. Like on video, like you just like have like a nice blue hue to you. Like it's nice. You seem like you're either about to get arrested or you're in a very calming
place. Cops are outside.
Yeah, the cops are like literally about to bust down your door or you're in a calm place.
Mike, you and I watched this movie together at your house.
Oh.
The first time.
It's a Cage movie?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Mandy?
It's Mandy. Don't they... He crafts the axe. Isn't that a guitar or is that not a guitar? Is it just an axe?
It's close. It may, I was thinking of that as a guitar. That's fine.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the big
silver... Yeah, yeah. Like whatever his garland or Mandy. Whatever he calls it. Yeah.
Mandy. All right.
All right.
Number two is an animated children's film from the 2020s that was a Netflix original. That was one of my favorite movies of the year when it came out. I think it's an absolutely incredible movie. Very fun. There's a car on the movie poster.
I didn't see this movie, but I think I know what it is.
What is it?
I gave it's a lot
guess,
of hints here.
Please. Yeah.
Shit.
Netflix.
Somebody car... versus the Machines.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, I'm so close. You did love this movie. Yeah, yeah. I don't know the title, but yeah, I was going to say something about the robots.
Family
robots.
Name. What's the family name?
Damn.
Oh, I don't know.
That's a cool hat. Is it the Johnsons?
Nope.
The Jeffersons? The Applebee?
The Mitchells. The Mitchells. Versus the Machine. Yes. It's such a good movie. It's so fun. It's so good.
Cool, cool.
But yes. So, Mandy, Mitchells versus the Machines, Beetlejuice, Little Shop of Horrors. That's one and only Anthony.
Pretty cool.
His most recent movie on his watch list is a movie that we covered in the Memory Loss Lap, Joe. It is Dark City.
Nice. The pre-Matrix Anthony. Yeah.
And shout out to Mike Manzi for joining us on this episode.
Yeah, thank you, Resident Historian Mike Manzi.
Thanks for having me. I don't think I've been on since the bullet train, which was a very long train. So pleasure to be back here at the plant store.
Yeah, well, the way that we do it here is that we, you know, just... I get the list of the movies, and I send it to the people we want to have on the show, and I let them pick a movie, and you pick this one, and here we are.
That's all it takes, you know? Yeah, people come into the shop, they think it's complicated. I'm like, nope, you just come in, you pick what you want, and then you get it. Simple as
that.
And then you
have
it for the rest of your life. Time.
You commit quickly, and then you
don't
live.
Think about it. Don't think too hard.
That's the best. I think that's like the best crest to have in getting tattoos is when you're just like, just don't think, just do it. Like, you know, people want to. I'm sure that you see this so often that people want to add like and have so much meaning behind every little tattoo, and like every detail needs to mean something. And you're like, no, bro, it doesn't.
It's funny, like somewhat related, and this will be, I'll go out on this. It's like, it always reminds me of Pulp Fiction, Bruce Willis, Butch, where he's like, we're American and our names don't mean shit. Like, I always
think
about that with tattooers. Like, don't put too much thought into these kinds of things. Like, get what you like. If it looks nice, fine. But it doesn't have to mean... It's cool if it does. That's fine.
But it's cool if it does. It's cool if it does. But, like, I don't need, like a novel about your tattoo. Like, because I'm like, oh, that looks cool. They're like, yeah, it's like, no, I don't. It's fine.
Sit down because you're about to hear
it. It's for you. That's for you to know. And that's also fine. But, like, I don't need to know that. You're good.
Mike, what would you like to plug?
The Monsters That Made Us with me and Dan Colon the last Friday.
I saw you guys can we gas you up? I saw you guys got listed on best monster
movie web's number one horror movie podcast.
Insane.
Dude, Dan's been sending me shit like all week because he Googled us and like found out all this other stuff about our show that's been going on. So it's like, I'm telling you, I'm like, Dan, I think the show is way more popular than we think the show is. Like, I'm just doing a podcast, you know, but here we are making lists.
Amen.
And all kinds of shit. So that's a good one. We got the next episode coming out as of this recording is going to be Mummy 3, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Fun. Third time's a charm, Mike.
Hey, there you go. That's right. Things are lining up with that this month. Also got Uncle Francis's Wine Cellar with, of course, everybody's favorite, attendee of this.
Can't get rid of
him.
This guy,
Brian Late Night Rodriguez, the man himself. He and I get over there, talk Uncle Francis a lot. Yeah. Joey and I do a bunch of shows over at cageclub.me and, I do a show called Third Time's a Charm. We mentioned it
just
now.
Joe literally just said.
I just said it. Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry, guys. I was working all day.
You should get yourself to co-host or like to be a co-host on Mummy 3 so that you can do a cross promotion.
With
Third Time's a Charm.
That would be
ultimately.
Would
I'm trying
brain.
To say just release it on Third Time's a Charm.
I should just be the host and the guest. And just,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, but Third Time's a Charm is still coming out the third of every month. So check that out. And
although
yes.
Next month
is we're taking the month off because it's April is second time around, So check out a new episode of that instead.
Joe, our next episode is Life in the Fast Lane, number 25, Too Fast, Too Furious, minute 100. Still not the
100
final.
100 minutes.
Minute, wow.
But the 100th minute of the movie. Still not going to finish the movie. That's going to take another 3 weeks to do.
100 minutes
and
a mile.
Another 3 weeks after that to do the credits, but we're getting there.
You're going
to
do the credits too?
Yeah.
So like a minute of credits, you're going to list all the names that you
No. We do all the credits.
We found some fun stuff. Okay. Like Paul Walker's dad was like a gun consultant on the first one or something like that. Oh. Like we did find some like weird, like,
too bad he wasn't a gun
couple...
consultant on that.
Take this very seriously, Mike.
Baldwin.
Yeah, I already made the Alec Baldwin joke, Mike.
Callback.
Oh, thank you.
Mike is so tired.
I know, I'm just fucking with them. Sorry.
But next week is Life in the Fast Lane. So if you want to email in family@cageclub.me, we will read it on the next episode, please. And thank you. But for all things Too Fast, Too Forever, go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/TooFastTooForever, or @TooFastTooForever on all the platforms. Email us, family@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon page at TooFastTooForever.com and our store at cageclub.me/shop. And come back next week for another Life in the Fast Lane. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we will tell you all about it
when we see you again.